You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Individuals and families across Canada are struggling to cope with the negative impacts of the current economic recession. Nevertheless, Canada's best-paid CEOs breezed through the worst year of the recession with earnings much higher than the average Canadian salary. This is one of the key findings of a recent report which examines the earnings of the 100 best-paid CEOs in Canada in 2009. Hugh McKenzie is author of this report. He's an economist and a research associate with the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. And Hugh joins me by phone from Toronto. Hello, Hugh.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Now, the title of your report suggests that the earnings of Canada's business elite are recession-proof. Just how recession-proof are they?
Well, they're remarkably recession-proof. The average of the highest-paid 100 CEOs in Canada made 155 times what the average Canadian did in 2009. Which was, after all, as most people know, the pit of the recession, if I can put it that way. And to put it into the terms that that we've settled on as a way of making it clear to people how great the disparity is, the average of the top 100 CEOs would have earned what the average Canadian earned in a whole year by 2:30 in the afternoon on the first working day of the year this year.
That's so much easier to understand than 155 times, which is this sort of, you can't even get a grip on it, but to think you could just work your first day and then go home and that would be it, that's really stunning.
Yeah, and it's particularly stunning when you consider that was the worst year by far of the recession. And after all, if you listen to the theory that apologists for the business community and business pay lay out, CEO pay is supposed to be linked to the performance of the economy. Well, it clearly isn't. If there's a link, it sure isn't very strong.
Now, I understand that a large part of a CEO's income typically comes from stock options. How do stock options work?
Well, a stock option is an interesting little trick that CEOs get in their pay packages. What a stock option does is it gives you the right to buy a share of a company at a predetermined price. So to put it in very concrete terms, let's say, for example, that the option price is $10. So what that means is that once the CEO gets the right to exercise the option, which sometimes takes a couple of years, the CEO would have the right to buy the share at $10. And if the share had increased to $20, the CEO gets to pocket the difference. So the option basically locks in the right to buy the share at an historical price. And then at any point during the period that you can exercise the option, you can instantaneously buy the share at 10 and sell it at the going price and pocket the difference.
Now, I understand there's also a tax advantage involved in the stock options. How does that work?
Well, the neatest little trick for CEOs is that the gain that they make when they sell that option, when they exercise the option, buy the share at the low price, and then cash it in for the extra, that gain is taxed as if it's a capital gain, which means that it's taxed at half the rate that the wage and salary income that most people earn and pay their taxes on. And what's interesting about that, and actually what actually kind of drives me crazy about this particular tax loophole, is that there are two justifications that are typically advanced for giving preferential treatment to capital gains. One of them is that you need to compensate for inflation over a long period in which you hold an asset, because the theory is that it's not fair to tax people as if there's been a capital gain when all that's been happening is inflation. And the other is to recognize the fact that people are taking a risk. Well, in a stock option, neither of those things is valid. There's no inflation issue because when an executive exercises an option, he literally owns that share for nanoseconds before he cashes it in and takes the money that he's made. And the other is that there's clearly no risk because the executive has no money at risk. The option doesn't cost the executive anything. So the worst that can happen to the executive is that he doesn't make anything out of the option, which is not the idea of risk that most people would have in mind.
Now, we're frequently told when we talk about CEOs' salaries that unless you pay those really high salaries, stock options, the whole thing, you don't get really high-quality CEOs. Now, is that true, that they do a really good performance, they're worth that kind of money?
Well, to put it bluntly, nobody's worth that kind of money. And what is interesting to me is that in the 80s, executives were able to struggle along making about 40 times what the average person made. Somehow, the value of CEOs to these companies has gone up by a factor of 3 or 4 or 5 relative to everybody else in the last 20, 25 years. And I just don't see any evidence for that. What this is about is a combination of a market for CEO leadership talent that is completely out of control, and frankly, boards of directors that are just being lazy.
Why do you say they're being lazy?
Well, in the old days, when a board of directors was sitting down trying to figure out what to pay the CEO of the company that they were responsible for, What would typically happen is that the compensation committee of the board would sit down with the executive once a year, and they would basically have a conversation that says something that goes something like this: "What are your plans for the next year? What do you expect to be able to achieve? And let's put some measures on that." And 12 months from then, they would sit down with the executive again, and they would go over the list of things that the CEO said that they were going to do to build the business or to strengthen the business or to make it more profitable. And they would say, "Well, you did this, and you only did about half of that, and you didn't do any of this. And so that's the basis on which we're going to pay you your bonus." That's hard work because you actually have to think about the relationship between decisions that an executive makes and the way the company performs and all of that stuff. It's much easier just to say, "Here, executive, you can have a stock option. If for some reason the value of the stock goes up, then you're going to make off like a bandit. And we don't actually have to do anything. All we have to do is look at the newspaper to see what the price of the stock was, and we'll know how much we're paying you." That, to me, is lazy. And I'm not the only person out there who's saying this. One of the things that I've found interesting over the 5 years that I've been doing this work is that increasingly there's starting to be quite strong negative commentary from what one might call the business academic community, people in business schools who study the way corporations make decisions. And a number of leading figures in this group have started to levy really strong criticism against using stock options to pay people for two main reasons. One is that the price of a company's stock really has very little to do with anything that an executive can actually control or influence. It's basically like giving an executive a stock option is basically like giving them a lottery ticket for free. An executive, executives have just about as little to do in real terms with what is going to determine the stock price of their company as you or I might have of influencing the odds of winning 649. The other issue, and this is something that is really starting to bother people who think about these things, is that by definition, a stock option has no cap. And that's why we've been seeing over the last few years not just the average of the $6.6 million or whatever the number happens to be for the top 100 in any given year, but we're seeing salaries for the leaders of this group in the 25, 30, 35, 40, sometimes over $50 million range, which is clearly just so stratospheric it's ridiculous.
How do the findings of your report fit into a trend, a general trend in Canada of income inequality? Because I understand you're familiar with the work of Richard Wilkinson and Kate Pickett, who were Richard Wilkinson was recently in Canada speaking about his book and The Spirit Level, and we played that on our program. And he said Canada's gotten a lot worse.
Yes, Canada has gotten a lot worse, the numbers for CEO pay are, I guess, I would describe them as the most concrete and easily understandable, visible manifestation of a much broader problem of growing income inequality that we've seen in Canada. One of my colleagues at the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, Armin Yalnizian, last fall released a study looking at what had happened to the overall economic income growth in Canada over the last 20 years. And what Armin found was that between 1997 and 2007, fully one-third of all of the income growth in Canada went to the highest income 1% of income earners. And this explosion in CEO pay is in that respect, it's sort of the most visible indicator of that phenomenon, and I think people who I wouldn't describe as the kind of usual left wing suspects are starting to raise questions now about the implications of this kind of inequality, both for the individual corporations that these people lead, but also for society as a whole. At the corporate level, people are asking themselves the question, what does it do to the motivation of somebody who works for a bank or a big energy company to know that that courtesy of their labor, their chief executive officer is making 155 times or 200 or 250 times what they are? And at the societal level, one of the real indicators of sort of social health around the world has become how healthy and vibrant the middle class is. And what we're seeing in these data is a real squeeze on the living standards of middle income families, households, and individuals. At the expense of and a grinding down of households at the bottom of the income scale, solely for the benefit of a tiny minority at the top, and the social and health and educational implications of those trends are profound.
Now, it's been almost 2 weeks since your report was released. Has there been any public response from any of the companies listed in the report?
Well, this wasn't anything that I did myself, but for reasons known only to itself, the Toronto Star decided that this year the CEO pay disparity was going to be a big issue, and we released the report on Monday, and in the Saturday newspaper, the Star ran two full pages of stories related to the CEO income gap. And one of the things that they did that one can do when one is a large newspaper and can assign three people to work full-time on something for a week is they actually phoned every one of the 100 people on the list and asked them how they justified their pay. And only one of the 100 people had the guts to answer the question. It was quite remarkable. I mean, in addition to speaking volumes, I mean, if you can't come up with even a flimsy justification, it speaks volumes about the process that's involved. But it also means that clearly one of the things that these companies are not getting for their $6.6 million average is somebody who's passed Public Relations 101.
Thanks very much for talking to us this morning, Hugh.
No problem.
I've been speaking with Hugh McKenzie. He's the author of Recession Proof, a report which examines the earnings of the 100 best paid CEOs in Canada in 2009. And you can find a copy of that report on the website of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, and they're at policyalternatives.org.